Hey folks, Justin McElroy here. Listen, just want to warn you ahead of time, while this week's show will still be free of profanity as you've come to expect from us, we do get into some adult topics. So if you're listening with the kids, you might want to make sure that they're comfortable with that, I guess. I don't know what your relationship is like with your kids.
I'd have that whole birds and the bees talk with them before listening to this episode if I were you.
You go ahead and knock that out. Thanks.
Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Song is about some books. One, two, one, two, three, four.
Welcome to Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine. I am your co-host, Justin McElroy.
And I'm Sydney McElroy.
It's the holiday season. That was it. That's your part. Try again.
It's the holiday season.
Holiday season.
So hickory dick. Don't forget to hang up your smocks, Sid.
Hang up your socks.
Hang up your socks, Sid.
Hang up your stocks.
Hang up your stocks.
Don't get caught in the stocks.
Sydney, it's...
I don't know this song, clearly.
It's the holiday season. I've of course started my shopping as is my usual in October, but I'm still needing a few more things to fill out your stocking.
Well, honey, actually I was really hoping for a sex box this year.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean I already have the new Xbox, but I mean I guess I could get a second one.
No.
I never thought you were head into games.
No. Not an Xbox. A sex box.
A sex box?
I was really hoping to, like...
Is that on Amazon, or...?
To capture, like, my orgastic potency, mm-hmm. You know, my orgone energy. I don't really feel like I've got a good handle on it, so I really need a sex box or an orgone accumulator, sorry.
Don't
of course, that's probably the name you know him by.
Don't beat yourself up. Time has proven that I don't have that great of a handle on your orgastic energy either. So we're at least in the same boat on that front.
Marriage humor.
Sydney, what's a sex box? Like, what are you even saying?
Well, to understand what a sex box is, I think we're going to have to...
I mean, I understand what a sex box is. I don't want people out there thinking, I don't know about some cool sex thing. Because it sounds like a cool sort of like sex thing.
Right.
So I just want you to tell the people at home what it is because I know already.
Right. You instantly thought it was an Xbox, like a video game machine.
That's just a little cool guy humor that we use to throw off the plebes.
That's what you call it, right? A video game machine?
A video game contraption, actually.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Okay, Sid, sex box.
Okay, if I'm going to explain what a sex box is, I'm probably going to have to treat you to a little biography.
I'm ready.
This will be your oral biography for the day.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you about a guy named Wilhelm Reich.
Okay.
So clearly you know all about him already, so I'll just skip to the...
No, I don't. I'm not that much of a cool guy. I will admit I don't know about Wilhelm Reich. He sounds German, though.
Austrian, but close. Right?
I can handle that. I can live with Austrian.
So he was an Austrian born in 1897. To be fair, he was raised to speak only German. So there's that.
Okay.
And
so I was right.
This guy's going to grow up to be a psychiatrist, and I'm going to tell you a lot of weird stuff about that. But it's important to know that early on, we're going to go in chronological order here. Early on, he had an interest in sex.
How early are we talking?
Like he started visiting brothels when he was 15.
Cool. That's a cool kid.
Yeah. He masturbated daily. He liked to watch animals have sex. And he was upper class, and so he had sex with all of his servants as well. Mm-hmm. He actually also...
Where did he find animals having sex? That's not... I would like...
The woods?
Okay, I have to think that if you... And anyone in their day-to-day life... I'm not going to say anyone. 90% of people, their day-to-day life come across animals having sex. They are not going to immediately... like avert their gaze. I think they will at least take a moment and just be like, well, that's crazy. Those animals are having sex.
Well, I'm assuming he like actively sought out animals that were having sex.
Hey, you got any good tips on where I can find some animals having sex? I'm a stranger in town. I'm 15.
Maybe in Austria that happens all over the place.
Where can a kid go to watch
animals
two
having sex
do
all
it?
Over?
Yeah.
He actually, when he was a kid, also would watch his mother have sex with his tutor. His mother was having an affair with his tutor, and he would sneak up and watch that.
That's just sloppy affairing.
Yeah, was actually the subject of the first case report he would ever write later on as a physician about a case of breaching the incest taboo when he was watching his mom have sex.
Gross. Gross start, Wilhelm. I hope it gets better. We should also thank Ross and Ellen for...
Yeah, thank you, Ross and Ellen, that you are you inspired this episode and our research into the very strange and kind of gross Wilhelm Reich.
If you want to suggest a topic, you can email us, sawbones@maximumfun.org. Sorry, Sydney, go right ahead.
As we go into his medical career, it starts out pretty benign. He served in the army, and then he started studying medicine. And, you know, that's probably what a doctor should start out doing.
it's a very good place to start.
It's a great entry into the medical world. You know, all doctors have to choose their specialty, and it's not uncommon for them to find a mentor of such that would help guide them in what specialty they would choose. And he met Sigmund Freud in 1919, and they became close friends, and that inspired him to go into, you know, psychoanalysis and psychiatry. Freud actually even let him start seeing patients for psychoanalysis even before he had finished medical school.
So he must have been pretty on point. I mean, if he could get basically like an internship with Freud.
Well, I mean, he was on point in the sense that Freud really liked him.
Yeah.
So, which, I mean, let's
be fair. I don't
know
how good of a judge of character Freud was.
Well, he's a little bit of a weirdo, too.
He's kind of a weirdo.
No offense. Some great ideas. Little weird.
Especially back then, right? Didn't everybody think he was a weirdo?
No, at the time, I mean, he was pretty well respected, I think.
Okay.
And so him endorsing Wilhelm Reich gave him a lot of credibility. When he finished school, he joined the Vienna Psychoanalytics Association, and he actually rented a house down the street from Freud and would just see patients out of that house. Mm-hmm. And that's when
this
things...
is getting a little single white female for my tastes.
Well, this is
Freud,
when...
funny running into you. Gosh, can we keep... yeah, I know, Wilhelm. You wait for me at my mailbox every day. What do you want?
Is that your favorite bakery? That's my favorite bakery.
It's the only one in town, Wilhelm. This is weird. You're weirding me out, and I'm Freud. So
what was
Vienna?
Something. I bet there were a lot of bakeries.
Sydney, what have we talked about interrupting the flow?
Sorry, Justin. So this is when things started to go a little awry. Because unlike, as far as I know, this is not true of Sigmund Freud, Wilhelm Reich started having sex with his patients.
Not like a great therapeutic relationship?
No, absolutely not recommended. It's actually one of the few things that I definitely have to teach in my medical school curriculum.
So like,
I'm required to teach my medical students not to have sex with their patients. I have to explicitly say that.
I bet that's a short lesson, though. I mean, just don't do that.
Yeah, I pretty much just in the middle of another lecture say, oh, and by the way, don't have sex with your patients. Now you've been told.
Moving on
to less obvious topics.
I would love to meet the guy, the one, because you know that policy has to be instituted because some guy at some point was like, what?
They didn't tell me not to.
Nobody told me not to.
That's why all these policies are instituted.
Yeah, right.
So he was continuing to see patients. He was having sex with some of his patients. He made the mistake, or I don't know, maybe it was the lucky, maybe not a mistake, whatever, the serendipitous action of seeing a patient named Annie Pink, who he had an affair with and then was forced to marry by her father. So interestingly enough, she became a psychoanalyst as well, and they had two kids, both of whom became doctors. This should have turned his life around, don't you think?
You would think that seems like, okay, enough of being weird.
But See, the thing is, he wasn't satisfied with just practicing his little family of psychoanalysts on in the Freud, you know, tradition. He wanted to kind of, you know, strike out on his own with his own theories. So he developed the concept of what's called character armor.
Character armor. Okay, like armor class, like in Dungeons and Dragons. You have a plus +3 to your goblin defense. Character armor.
I don't know what any of that means.
Okay. That's a great, great.
Your character armor.
You're really respecting the flow, and I got to give that up to you.
What do you want me to pretend to like your...
Just pretend to like Dungeons and Dragons
dice games?
For once.
I don't know.
Dice game. We're not shooting craps with Slim Ricky down on the alley.
You're right. It's much cooler. You're hanging out with Dungeon Master Joe down in the basement.
That's a stereotype. You can play Dungeons and Dragons anywhere.
It could be the attic.
Be below ground, but it could be a den.
Your parents' living room.
A rumpus room.
No, character armor. So basically it was the idea that if you looked at the expressions and the mannerisms of a person and kind of the way they hold their physical body, the way their posture, their gait, that you could read into their neuroses and their defense mechanisms and that kind of thing.
So you're talking about like literally the way they carry themselves.
Yes. Like their armor is their physical self and it displays their character.
That's not that far off, right? I mean, like there's some truth to that for some extreme cases, right?
Well, definitely, you know, someone who is anxious appears that way. Mm. But I think the interesting thing about it is that instead of necessarily addressing the problem, the anxiety or what have you, that you could diagnose the problem by looking at them and then you could fix it by fixing the physical mannerisms. So like massage them really hard.
Just loosen up.
Yeah. Like your jaw seems really stiff. I'm going to push on it until it hurts really bad.
And then it'll be cured.
And that was the kind of stuff he would do. Like, I'm just going to push on that spot on your back for a long time. Like, really hard, like with my fist. It sounds like a massage, but it wasn't.
No, it was something much... He tried to convince people it wasn't a massage.
And he liked this idea of the character. And he actually did a lot of you know, theorizing and philosophizing about the character and how what the role it plays in different neuroses. But then he got into a different, you know, I mentioned that in the beginning he had this really early interest in sex. And so he began to incorporate that into his kind of theories about psychiatry and psychoanalysis. He started opening sex clinics all around Vienna because he thought that if people could have better sex and have more orgasms, they'd probably be happier.
Okay. Sure. Yeah.
Sure.
I think.
He had a whole group with him of physicians and a lawyer for some reason that you could call at any hour of the day and ask questions about sex. They would give you contraception, which was very, you know, controversial at the time. They would also give you a lot of Marxist political advice.
Okay. You kind of slid that one in there, Wilhelm, but...
Well,
I guess.
He actually...
Is
he
that like if you want to get dinner at the soup kitchen, you have to learn about Jesus? Same,
exactly.
Same principle.
If you want to get some condoms,
let me just
you have to learn about Karl Marx.
With Karl Marx,
he started the.
I had a sex clinic where you had to learn about Richard Marx. All his hits of the '80s, you had to be able to recite. Don't mean nothing, but like verbatim, cold from memory, all the verses, and then I would teach you about having sex.
Because once you're able to do that, you've mastered the art of seduction.
Yeah, there you go. That's the trick is like, at the end, you've repeated all the Richard Marx tunes, and you're like, that's it. That's everything you need to know.
That's all.
You've
the student has become the master.
You graduated, and I pull off a mask, and I've been Richard Marx the whole time. Please buy some literature on your way out. Things have been a little tight.
So a lot of what he did, he started this German Society of Proletarian Sexual Politics, where you could answer like sex poll questions. That was kind of the idea. And it was all about sexual freedom in conjunction with these political beliefs. He had like a mobile clinic where he would go around and he had a whole group where he would talk to teens and the male patients while women all got fitted for contraceptive devices. And then there would be another doc who would specialize in talking to children. He had a lot of progressive views about that sex before marriage was okay. Okay. He believed that sex at a younger age was okay.
Getting ticier?
And I will say that he was overwhelmed with patients using these tactics.
Yeah, all of them teens. Hey, listen, we heard that
You're cool?
I mean, like, super cool?
I heard you're cool.
He began to morph this into the theory of what I mentioned earlier, orgastic potency. So that the way to be psychiatrically healthy is to lose yourself in just a really great orgasm. Because in that moment, you'll release all of your negative emotions and all of your muscle tension, and you'll be fine. And you can cure all neuroses.
Hold on. Did you say cure all neuroses?
Yes, cure all neuroses this
way. Cure all neuroses. So it's a cure-all.
He began to be known. He wrote a book about this, and he was known as the founder of a genital utopia.
Men are from Mars, women are from Venus.
He was also known as the prophet of the better orgasm.
That was actually my college nickname, which is great.
What I think is great is this is he sent this book to Freud because, you know, they were buddies. And this is when Freud started going, you know, maybe I misjudged this guy.
This guy's maybe a little.
Because he kind of wrote him back and said, okay, this is weird. You don't really believe this, right?
He was like, no, I totally do.
He totally did. I totally do. And that started it. That would count the beginning of the end of his relationship with Freud. And this is where he really starts kind of branching out on his own. He starts talking about character armor more and saying that it actually can it can cause problems, like it can cause disease. So he said that after he fell out with Freud, that the reason that Freud later got cancer of the jaw was because he had a really strict Jewish upbringing. And he repressed his sexual desires, and that if he hadn't done that, he would never have gotten cancer.
That's an awkward phone call, huh? Yeah, so here, I hear that you solved my cancer, huh? Because I'm a Jewish person? Really?
Really?
That's the best you got?
That's, okay.
That's where you're coming from?
Which was even more interesting, he was actually a Jewish person himself, so.
Just apparently cooler one.
Well, his parents refused to raise him as such, so I guess
he thought that was... Yeah, my parents were chill. Yeah. That's why I'm not going to get jaw cancer.
Now, at this point, he took his ideas about having sex before marriage and started promoting adolescent sex as a way to start the process of, like, ending neuroses and psychiatric health even earlier.
You can't see it, but I'm tapping out. That's me just tapping out.
He was kicked out of the Vienna Psychiatric Association for this. He actually was kicked out of the Communist Party.
Wow. For this. Too much for them.
And eventually, you know, we're going into the same time period when Hitler came to power. So he actually had to flee the country anyway. He moved to Denmark after several different moves where nobody wanted him. He moved to Denmark and they let him live there, but they told him before he even applied that he could not join their Communist Party.
Yeah, we've heard. We get the newsletter, okay?
He did at this point, he was continuing, I should say, through all this time period to practice psychoanalysis and therapy. Wherever he went, even though largely his theories were being denounced, he would still see patients. And he started to develop therapy where he, you know, and some of this is actually okay. He would sit across from his patients as opposed to the old, you know, patient laying on the couch staring at the ceiling kind of thing.
And then he would have sex with them,
Exactly. Then he would ask them to undress.
Yeah, okay, see.
And he would touch them while they were naked in order to release their various character armor things.
Is this just the plot of Don Juan DeMarco?
He also would press really hard, like I mentioned, to, you know, relieve these tensions. But he thought it would, he thought if you pressed hard on certain parts of the body, you could invoke an orgasm reflex.
I mean, I guess that's like... true of some very specific areas.
But he would do this on, like, your face. I'm going to take the heel of my hand and press as hard as I possibly can on your face until you have an orgasm reflex.
A secret known only to the most popular dentists.
At this point, he went to a meeting of the International Psychoanalytic Association, which he was not really welcome at, but he insisted that he was still going to go. And the reason he wasn't welcome
is standing outside with a boombox over his head.
Basically, everybody...
In your eyes, I pressed to give you an orgasm.
Basically, it had already been decided prior to this meeting that he was going to be kicked out, that they were going to once and for all, as like an international society, just denounce this weirdo and not let him back in.
Right, is everybody on Earth here? Can we all agree that Wilhelm Reich's the pits?
That he is a weirdo and he's pushing on naked people's faces.
Totally.
So he came and he camped out there and wandered around the conference the whole what weekend or however long it went on with a giant knife in his belt. he was kicked out and not let back in. And, and at that point, there was no, you know, there were always a few kind of weirdos who were following his theories. But for the most part, everybody kind of abandoned that. He moved at that point. He went and gave a lecture in Norway and liked it so much that he stayed there. He started experimenting with some new therapies with patients. He studied biology and thought that maybe what it really was, this instead of this kind of orgasmic energy, that there was this that fluid fills up different parts of the body and that there's like a bioelectric discharge. Again, I think he's talking about orgasm, and then the fluid goes away. And so, in order to test this, he had a bunch of patients hooked up to oscilloscopes.
I know that word. What's that?
And some kind of like it measures like bioelectrical activity.
Okay.
And they would like touch each other and masturbate and stuff in front of him. And then he would watch the oscilloscopes to see the energy that was released.
That's weird.
Basically, he was shunned all over for this kind of stuff. And so he moved to the one place where he still had some fans.
Which was?
You guessed it.
United States of America?
The good old US of A.
Yeah. I take all comers. Bring me your poor. Bring me your hungry. Bring me your weirdos.
Bring me your sex weirdos.
Bring me your sex weirdos.
This is where the sex boxes come in. Because if you're going to move to the U.S., you got to have a gimmick. If you're going to sell,
you gotta have a hook.
If you're going to sell to Americans, we need something snappy.
Yeah.
You know, forget this.
Something peppy. Something.
Forget this character armor. Forget this vegetative current orgasmic potency. We've heard it all before.
We need a brand.
So what he started to describe was the idea that there is a cosmic energy, that we're going beyond the orgasmic potency. There's a cosmic energy inside all things.
Okay.
Okay? And like a life force.
This is getting a little Matthew McConaughey for me, but I'm trying to hang in there.
He called it orgone energy.
Okay.
It's because, I mean, he just can't get
can't
over.
Get his mind off of it.
he's like a 12-year-old boy. And he thought that he actually developed a special telescope that you could use to see it if you wanted to see this energy. It was called an organoscope, of course.
Well, I mean, no, he didn't. Sydney, he did not do that. He made a thing that, like, I don't know, had like purple paint on the lens. Like, can you see it? It's incredible.
It's orgone energy.
It's orgone energy. It looks like a penis. Yes. What would you expect?
Have you heard my theories? Don't you know what I'm all about?
I wear conscious pants.
So it was this kind of blue or blue-gray coloring to things, basically, is mm-hmm. what it would look like.
That's actually what the TARDIS is flying through.
that's why the TARDIS is blue.
That's right.
And you can see it in the color of the sky. That's an example of the presence of orgone energy. The northern lights, he believed, were discharges of orgone energy. St. Elmo's fire.
Boogie fever.
As well as, I guess, sometimes sexually excited frogs get a bluish tint.
Okay.
So that is orgone energy. This is news to me. Yeah. Maybe he made that up too.
Yeah.
Maybe when he looked at sexually excited frogs, he thought they looked blue.
Maybe he would only look at sexually excited frogs.
Maybe the better question is, how do you know when a frog is sexually excited?
You show him a picture of his piggy.
Okay, that was good.
Thanks.
I'll give you that. So he had this theory about this orgone energy, but you can't prove it because you can't really see it. Well, yeah, because it's fake. But he wanted to be able to prove that it was out there. So he built a sex box, is what they came to be known in the media. But it was basically like a Faraday cage. And then he called it an orgone accumulator. So they were like big plywood boxes, like human-sized plywood boxes. They just had a chair and sometimes a little window inside. And they were lined with like rock or sheet iron or something, like a bunch of layers of that. Because the more layers of whatever on the walls, the more concentrated the orgone energy you could catch was. So you would just take off all your clothes and then sit in these boxes.
Maybe this dude just had like a rapidly evolving fetish spectrum. Like, he just every week he would wake up and something new, like, okay, well, apparently now I can't finish unless people are in cages. That's my new thing. And they're looking for, are in cages and looking for space energy. That's the only way I can finish.
That's what the window was for, so you can just peer through it.
I think it's coming along in there.
You feeling the energy?
That's not
feeling
a good? That's not a camera on you. That's another organoscope.
Don't move, though. Don't move, though.
It's a daguerreotype, so it's going to take a little while.
He believed that in addition to concentrating orgone energy, that these orgone accumulators could cure cancer. No. So he started off by giving cancer to mice and then sticking the mice inside.
At least their deaths meant something. Yeah, they didn't die in vain.
The thing is, to be fair, I don't think he was actually giving cancer to the mice because he had found some sort of particle that he believed was the cancer particle, but it wasn't. It was probably just a staph infection. So I think he was actually shooting mice full of staph.
And he got super bacteria. Excited when he could cure it. Like, then, look what I did.
Yeah, and so I'm guessing some of them got better, and so he said he cured cancer when really they just overcame a staph infection. I think it's great. So we've already said that he got too weird for Freud. He actually, during this
time...
Too
Weird for Freud's the name of my first album, by the way.
During this time period, he made friends with Einstein. And he met Einstein, and he talked about some of his theories. And Einstein wasn't super thrilled about him, but sure. he did think he was an interesting guy. And he did think he had kind of been treated unfairly for some of his just kind of progressive sexual ideas, not so much sex with among kids, but contraception and such.
Well, this is the problem, right? I mean, like, you and I are goofing on this guy, and I think with absolutely fair grounds too, but like it's hard because anybody that is our norms about sex are so concrete and they're so sort of ingrained in us that I think anybody trying to push forward an understanding of it can be unfairly maligned sometimes. And I think that also could create sort of that knowledge could create a shield for somebody where, you know, anything that they want to try, they're being persecuted for it because it's taboo rather than, no, it's just the weirdest.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think you're right. Because I think, you know, having a mobile sex clinic where you went around to people who normally wouldn't have access to physicians very easily and giving them information about sex and giving them contraception and talking to them about that is a really novel idea for the 19... I mean, we're talking like the 1920s, 1930s. But then he obviously took it to a weird place.
Yeah.
So because he was buddies with Einstein... and nobody believed him about his sex boxes, he sent one to Einstein and said, you know, check this, you're a scientist, check out this sex box.
Check out the sex box.
And then tell everybody that it works. And to his credit, Einstein really did try to find some sort of energy differential, you know, within and outside of the box, above and below the box. I mean, he really did try to evaluate it to see if it had any merit.
Okay, everybody, if you have gotten nothing else from Sawbones, right now, I want you to go to Twitter or Facebook and say, today, I learned on Sawbones that our greatest scientific mind spent an afternoon looking for cosmic sex energy. Because what? And then put a link to our show. What? Albert Einstein could have done anything that day. Okay. He could have done anything, but he decided to look for cosmic sex energy in a box.
Do you know how many mysteries of the universe are unsolved because of the day he wasted examining the sex box?
He could have cracked anything. He could have cracked how to instantly warm your car when you go outside during the winter. He could have cracked anything, but instead he spent the afternoon looking for cosmic sex energy.
And this is why time travel doesn't exist.
Exactly.
Yet.
One more day and he would have had it. Oh my God, Albert Einstein, I'm disappointed in you.
Basically, he thought it was kind of silly, and he wrote Wilhelm Reich back and said, you know, I don't think this works. I'm sorry, man. You know, good try. Reich wrote him back like a 32-page letter, you know, basically saying you're an idiot and I'm right and you need to reevaluate it. And Einstein kind of said, you know, I don't think we should be buddies anymore.
18 pages were dirty pictures that he drew, though.
So just like every other country he went to at this point, he started being discredited in the press. Everybody was joking about this weird orgasm doctor with the sex boxes. He got fired from the university where he was teaching.
He's like the Incredible Hulk. Imagine the sad music at the end of it.
Everywhere he goes.
Moving on to the next country where they don't know about weird sex energy.
And he at this point, he was running this Ergonomic Infant Research Center, where basically he was studying children to see kind of the beginnings of their neuroses and where the beginnings of psychiatric illness come from. And a lot of the studying involved having a naked kid stand in front of a panel of 30 researchers.
Who could have seen that coming?
So obviously people weren't big fans of that. And that kind of ended his career. He continued to go on to, make up weird theories. The inverse of orgone energy was deadly orgone radiation, or DOR. Mm-hmm. He discovered, I guess, that. Discovered, invented, created.
He's sounding suspiciously like a 1960s Marvel comic at this point.
He found it in the atmosphere. He said it was poisoning us all, and the only way you could combat it was with a cloud buster.
Was getting naked in front of people and touching them. Let me guess.
No, he invented a
public
machine.
Erections. It's the only cure.
Have sex with all your patients. That's the only way we can cure it.
Quick.
No, he invented a machine called a cloud buster, which
just
really...
a bunch of repurposed sex boxes. Put antennas on. I can't sell these things.
I gotta find a new way.
Gotta find something else.
Cloud buster. 2000.
Cloud buster.
Now from Ronco.
Get it for the kids. Christmas is just around the corner.
For $19.99.
Guaranteed to almost definitely have never been used to harness the imaginary cosmic sex energy by Albert Einstein.
So the cloud buster, you should really look up a picture of this online, because it shows a picture of like him operating one. It's a bunch of like metal tubes that are all kind of lined up. It looks like a gun, like some kind of missile launcher, only there are a bunch of metal tubes all strapped to each other and wires wrapped around it, and it kind of goes down into water. And I don't know if it actually shoots water or if it just uses the water energy to shoot something. And he would shoot it at the clouds. And then he said when he had dissipated all the deadly orgone radiation, rain would happen. And so he actually was paid by some farmers, some blueberry farmers,
who apparently weren't farmers, reading the newspapers real close,
to come make it rain at their farm because their crops were dying. And he did go
have sex with them.
He had sex with all of them. He used his cloud buster, and it actually rained that night. So
what's up now, yeah. Albert Einstein?
So there were two farmers that believed him.
That's all you need.
Basically, at this point, it's kind of interesting. He was investigated by the FBI during all this, but that was it was a different Wilhelm Reich they were looking for.
Ah.
So it was just a coincidence that he was also a weirdo. But then a lot of psychiatrists and the FDA started an investigation of him because he was peddling these fake products to people, charging them money. And they basically confiscated all of his stuff and destroyed it and made him dismantle all of his sex boxes and made it illegal for him to sell them or traffic any of this stuff or any of the material about it. They actually burned his books and stuff.
Yikes. What were they hiding?
Exactly. And at that point, he really kind of lost it. He began like chasing UFOs. He continued to sell all of his orgone stuff, even though he had been forbidden to. And he actually ended up in jail because of it, which is where this sad story ends. He died of a heart attack in jail.
Oh, man. While having sex with people.
We can only imagine. Nowadays, we know that a lot of these theories are not true.
Right. Made up, you could say.
Made up. I'm certain that he did something for the, for the contraception movement. We could maybe give him credit for that.
Sure.
But not much else. It's funny that we can look back. A lot of people talked about, Freud and Einstein and a lot of famous psychiatrists and physicians at the time, when they met him, thought he was a genius who was going to change the world. And then in retrospect, looked back and said, he probably was severely mentally ill.
Yeah.
So there you go. It's a fine line, I guess.
Yeah, apparently. So that's the strange tale of Wilhelm Reich. Thank you again,
and, to Ross Nellen for.
And you're going to get me a sex box for Christmas. Right?
I will go to eBay right now. I'm sure I'll be able to pick one up. Thank you to everybody who listened to the show this week. Thank you for sharing the show. Sorry we missed you last week. Our little brother Griffin got married. So congratulations to him and his lovely wife Rachel.
It was McElroy. So beautiful. You guys really missed out.
You missed out. All of you. Super cold.
But sorry.
It was lovely.
Best wedding ever, other than, of course, ours, which was actually the best wedding ever.
Greatest, most romantic thing ever happened to anybody, ever. Thank you to people who tweeted about the show this week, like John Williams, Tyler Matheson, Naomi Farron, Mals, Christina Nethers, Anna Marquardt, Ricardo Jacoto, Kay Calland, Aaron P., and Hannah Crick. Thank you so much for tweeting about us. We're at Sawbones on Twitter, so you can listen or follow us there. Also want to mention, because I just saw it on our Twitter feed, our theme music is provided with kind permission from the taxpayers. The song's called Medicines. You can buy it on their website.
And it's awesome, and you should.
Go get it.
I also want to thank William Smith, who sent us a super cool book called Anomalies and Curiosities of Medicine. It has what he referred to as gross pictures, but I'm going to have to quibble. I think they're pretty awesome.
As soon as we got the book, she was literally just sitting at the table, like flipping through it for 20 minutes.
No, it's a great book. Thank you so much. I really love it. And the pictures did gross Justin out, to be fair.
Yeah. If you want to send us something, we're P.O. Box 54, Huntington, West Virginia, 25706. Let's keep those weird pictures to a minimum.
Send us gifts.
Yeah. Send us gifts.
I think we get in trouble for this.
No, it's fine. It's totally legal. Anyway, go review us on iTunes. Go subscribe to us there. Go pass that link around. Remember to tell people that Albert Einstein wastes afternoon looking for weird cosmic sex energy, because you know that now, thanks to us. And be sure to join us again next Friday for another episode of Sawbones. Until then, I'm Justin.
I'm Sydney.
And as always, don't drill a hole in your head.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.